This is Audible.
Homecoming King, written by Penny Reed, narrated by Joy Nash. Chapter 1. The moment you doubt whether you can fly, you cease forever to be able to do it. J.M. Barrie, Peter Pan. To bang or not to bang? That is the question. Kaylee peered at me from behind her black-rimmed glasses and set a briefcase on the stool to her left. She'd just walked in, and instead of saying hi like a normal person, this was how she greeted me. Frowning at the empty highball glass I'd just finished drying, I debated how to respond to my good friend's noteworthy dilemma. Are we talking about a guy? If so, I recommend making a pro-con list. No, Abby. My hair. I love your bangs. Oh, thank you. It has pockets. I'd taken to saying, thank you. It has pockets, as a means of dealing with the discomfort caused by unexpected compliments. Picking up a second highball glass, I wiped it clean of watery residue and checked my watch. Kaylee was an hour early. Not that I minded. She usually shuffled in 10 minutes before closing on the nights she had custody of our car, already wearing her pajamas and a silk bonnet on her head. By then, Walker, my boss, would be playing Never Gonna Give You Up by Rick Astley over the bar's speakers. He had this automated to happen every night, 4 times in a row, even when he wasn't here. His way of driving out the stragglers. Currently, Monster Mash reverberated from overhead, a herald of the season with Halloween just around the corner. The end of October to January 1st was my favorite time of the year for so many reasons, not the least of which were all the decorating opportunities. Orange lights zigzagged across the bar shelves behind me, and I'd covered every tea light on the dining tables and bar top with ceramic ghost covers. I'd also set up a creepy black Halloween tree, like a Christmas tree, only a spooky and leafless fake willow, instead of a lush and vibrant evergreen, in the corner of the dining area, complete with cobwebs, strings of spiders, an eyeball, finger, and miniature ceramic doll head ornaments. More doll heads, larger ones, 50 or so, were strung back and forth high above the entire bar. They hung from fishing line, which gave them the appearance of floating midair. I'd spent all spring and summer cackling in hilarity while making the heads at my pottery studio via slipcast molds procured for 50 cents each at Goodwill. Their freakishness did not disappoint, and I'd loved watching some of the customers cringe, smile, and then laugh uncomfortably while drinking under the doll head canopy. I'm tired of this haircut. Kaylee tossed her long braid over her shoulder, curls straining against and protesting the tidy style. She slid onto the stool adjacent to the one holding her briefcase. I gave Kaylee's hair a quick once over. I liked her hair, and she'd mentioned before that cutting bangs would require her to chemically remove the natural curl. So I said, I like your haircut and the curls. I knew you'd say that. But thank you, I like it too. The bell over the front door jingled, announcing one or more new customers just as the song switched to Frank Sinatra's version of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. I liked Frank, but I'd always considered it an impertinent and bossy song. Who is he to tell me how to spend my Christmas? Plus, late October was entirely too early for Christmas music. Be with you in a sec! I called without looking toward the sound, keeping my eyes on Kaylee as I reached for a few drink menus and cocktail napkins. I don't understand wanting to change something about yourself you already like. If you like your hair, don't change it. If you don't like your hair, have at it. See, I knew you'd say that too. She leaned forward, lowering her voice. Your statements are unsurprising, and I am unsurprised by your unsurprisingness. I frowned. Kaylee was obviously in a sassy mood tonight. Maybe her court date hadn't gone well. Gee, thanks. I said, sending her a disgruntled look, knowing better than to argue with a lawyer. You're in a rut, Abby. Her eyes turned soft. You do the same thing every day. You wear the same thing every day. You eat the same thing every day. The only things you change are the color of your nail polish and your haircut. And look how happy I am. I glanced toward the door to count the newcomers, but found only a solitary man, already sitting on a stool at the far end of the bar closest to the door. A huge, enormous, colossal mammoth of a man. He was so big and tall, the rest of the bar seemed to shrink in comparison. Great. Just great. Who is that? Is he a regular? Why do you look so irritated? Kaylee glanced between my face and the man, keeping her tone hushed, even though we were too far away from him to overhear our conversation, especially with Frank Sinatra crooning at us over the radio, telling us our Christmas will be merry and little this year. Even so, I also lowered my voice. It's just, we're less than an hour until closing, and he's not a regular. Convincing non-regulars to finish up and head out can be annoying. And he was big. And he was male. This wasn't always the case, but in my experience, maybe 9 times out of 10, a big, burly guy coming into the bar so close to closing didn't typically want a quick drink. Her gaze stayed on him, assessing. He's handsome, though, right? Is he? I grumbled, putting back all but one drink menu and one cocktail napkin. Yeah, very. And he looks familiar. She placed her elbow on the bar, narrowing her eyes as she leaned an inch toward him, as though to see him better in the dim light. I thought you had owl vision. Who does he look like? The truth was, other than noting this person's size and a general impression of his clothes, my eyes were blurry with visions of tonight's likely unpleasant conclusion. My coworker Ingrid and I coaxing him to leave, failing, and then having to either call Walker at home or the security company. I didn't care if this stranger was objectively the best-looking guy in the world. After tonight, I had 3 days off. Anyone making me work late tonight was a blobfish. Whatever. My voice must have hinted at my thoughts, because Kaylee tore her attention from the man, her eyebrows raised expectantly. Why do you always sound so irritated when there's a hot guy? Why do you dislike hot guys? You have to admit, hot guys have hot guy problems, which are like first world problems on steroids. Come on. Everyone likes hot guys. It's biological. There's nothing you can do about it. You have no choice. I would have argued with her, told her that I had nothing against hot guys in general, but she made a sound of protest before I could speak. Abby, her eyes were full of sympathy. Eventually, you're going to have to date someone. Ugh, dear Lord, not this again. Do I, though? I'd tried dating. In fact, I'd even tried marriage. Everything about it was a horrific disaster on so many levels. This topic was why Kaylee and I currently shared just a car instead of a car and an apartment. Yes. She looked entirely earnest and concerned. That just made her pushing worse. You can't let one bad experience, what, 8, 9 years ago, dictate the rest of your life. Can't I, though? I tucked a drink menu under my arm. Albert Einstein defined insanity as doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results, but I'd never been one of those people who needed to learn a lesson more than once. One and done. That was my motto. Especially when the one bad experience had ended in jail time. You must get back on the horse, Abby. Must I, though? I tapped my chin. Yes, you. Finally recognizing my attempt at deflection, she snapped her mouth shut and gave me a flat look. Your dense barrier of sass notwithstanding, you know getting out there, putting yourself out there would be healthy. Kaylee hadn't been there for my marriage, but she'd witnessed the aftermath. She'd watched me struggle under the mountain of debt and sorrow and anger and helplessness. Why couldn't she just drop this? And even if I hadn't barely survived my divorce, I'd heard and seen enough sad stories from bitter and depressed bar patrons to convince me that desire was a scam, soulmates were a lie, and the only thing romantic love did to your heart was break it. And then send it to bankruptcy court and jail for your ex's massive, I mean impressively colossal, debts and Ponzi scheme that you had no idea about when you'd gotten married at an impressionable 18 years old. Why can't you let me live my best life, Kaylee? Maybe my best life is eating scrambled eggs every day and never dating. Legit, I loved both scrambled eggs and never dating. She scowled, but her words were teasing. This is a good time to tell you, I and others consider your perpetual contentment with life a personal attack. I laughed. Here, let me go serve this hot guy real fast, and then you can continue to beat this dead horse that you insist I take for a ride. Utilizing her ninja skills, she grabbed my wrist before I could move away. Wait. Her eyes darted to the end of the bar and then back to me, whispering, "What if, instead, you flirt with the hot guy?" Kaylee indicated to the man with her chin, like I wouldn't know to whom she referred. The man's presence seemed to inhabit 1/10 of the available space in the bar. There was no missing him. I blinked at her. "Why would I do that?" She searched my face. "If you flirt with him, I won't bring up dating again for a month." Typical Kaylee. Life was one big bargaining opportunity. She was only happy when she was negotiating or arguing. "One flirting encounter buys me a month? I promise." She drew a finger in the shape of a cross over her heart. "Make it 3 months and we have a deal." "Deal," she said quickly, her eyes brighter, happier, like my agreement was a victory for her. "3 months, and maybe unbutton the top button of your..." I twisted my arm from her grip. "I can flirt without showing my boobs." "Yeah, but you have really nice boobs, and they deserve to be admired by someone other than me." "So noted." "And take that ring off," she loud whispered. Grunting, I did remove my grandmother's ring from my left ring finger, my shield against handsy and aggressive patrons, but I did not adjust the buttons of my shirt. I slipped the antique ring onto the middle finger of my right hand and walked down the long galley to the giant stranger. Obviously, if I got any creeper vibes from him, any at all, even a smidgen, the bet was off. Better to be safe than sorry. If he was perturbed by my lack of attentiveness thus far, he showed no outward signs. The man's eyes were on the screen of his phone, his arms braced on top of the bar, shirt sleeves rolled up, broadcasting some seriously tantalizing forearm action. Maybe I should have undone the first few buttons of my shirt. Exposed male forearms, in my opinion, were the equivalent of exposed female cleavage. Tits for that. Tat. I meant tit for tat. "Hey, what can I get you?" I asked, placing a drink menu and the square napkin on the bar while studying what I could see of his features. Dark blue or dark gray dress shirt, top 3 buttons undone, tie loose and slightly askew, a bright white undershirt beneath. He'd pulled off a heavy coat and it hung haphazardly on the back of his stool. His hair was short on the sides, longer on the top, and either light brown or dark blonde. The color was impossible to tell given the dimness of the room and the orange glow of the Halloween lights decorating the liquor shelf behind me. He had a nice forehead, what I could see of it, but his face and focus remained fastened to the screen of his phone as he responded in a monotone.
Beer, whatever amber you've got on tap, please.
Sure thing. You want a pint or...
Pint is fine, thanks.
Polite. I'd say he had a nice voice, except it had remained monotone. Stepping to the side, I grabbed a pint glass and positioned it under the tap of our most popular amber. Somewhere to my right, I heard the distinct and obnoxious sound of Kaylee clearing her throat. Sliding my gaze to the side, I found her eyes wide with meaning. Sensing her dissatisfaction with my lack of flirting, I shrugged, like, what can I do? She waved an exasperated hand toward her chest, then at the big guy, her eyebrows high arches, then tugged at the neck of her top, mouthing a word that looked like buttons, but it might have been boobs. I pressed my lips together, removing my eyes from hers. Again, what could I do? The guy was into his phone, way more than the idea of flirting with a female bartender. I wasn't currently, and never had been, in the habit of forcing men to pay attention to me. Live and let live, I say. The glass filled, I placed it on the napkin near his elbow. Hey, you want to start a tab?
Please.
Still without looking up, he set down his phone, pulled out his wallet, and placed a credit card and his driver's license on top of the bar. I swiped up both, my brain telling me to look at his birth date, even as my eyes strayed to his photo and the name beneath it. Be right back. My mouth fell open as I stuttered, ending my sentence with a silent gasp, my eyes bolting to the stranger, who wasn't a stranger at all. Gaping and caught within a snare I'd fashioned years and years ago, I was quite literally stupefied. Oh, dear Lord in heaven. Rex. I gaped, stared and stared and stared, my mind reeling. But how? And when? And how? And, Kaylee's obnoxious throat clearing snapped me out of my stupor, and I quickly turned before Rex spotted my shock trance. I stared blankly, not sure what to do next, not remembering whether I was coming or going, my breath tight in my lungs, my heart racing. Hell's bells! Rex McMurtry! Chapter 2. You'd rather make up a fantasy version of somebody in your head than be with a real person. Jenny Hahn. To all the boys I've loved before. Yes, before you ask, he was that, Rex McMurtry. The star defensive end for the Chicago Squalls, philanthropist and sexiest man alive, according to all the lists. Here, in my bar. Technically, it wasn't my bar, but it kind of was my bar because I'd worked here since my junior year of high school as a dishwasher, then busser, then server, now bartender. Therefore, I like to think of it as my bar. I wasn't dumbfounded because I'd just come face to forehead with a bona fide A-list celebrity. I was shooketh because I'd just come face to forehead with my elementary, middle, and high school crush. And it had been a brutal crush. In the same way, the cocktail of teenage hormones, being the tallest girl by far since preschool, shyness and inexperience are brutal. Rex was the only boy's name I'd ever doodled next to mine in notebooks. The only guy I'd ever had sex dreams about. Sorry if that's TMI, but it is what it is. And the sole reason I'd gone to football games or any other optional school-related event. I joined Girl Scouts in sixth grade because his aunt was the troop leader. I'd started drinking coffee my freshman year so I could sit in the diner across from where he washed and detailed cars during his spring and summer after-school job. Recalling those actions did not fill me with nostalgia. I hadn't been boy crazy. I'd been Rex crazy. And now here he was. Presently, long dormant embarrassment tinted by an unflattering shade of shame spurred my movements. I stepped to the register and tapped the screen, waking up the payment system. Unable to help myself, I hazarded a hurried glance over my shoulder, gobbling up the sight of Rex in the flesh, even as I did my best to redirect my thoughts. I was the bartender. He was the customer. He wanted to start a tab, and so that's what I would do. But first, one more look at those forearms. No! No! If you look at his forearms, you will drool all over your buttoned-up shirt. Resting my attention away, I slammed my eyes shut and willed the fogginess in my head to clear. I watched Rex's televised pro football games whenever I could, but I hadn't seen him in person since graduation. He'd been slated to sit right next to me, since our last names were so close, but I'd done Rachel McQuaid a solid and let her take my spot. First, she'd also liked him since forever. Second, she was kind and funny. And third, truthfully, she'd had a better chance of snagging his attention than I did. They'd had classes together because they were both smart, so he already knew her. Also, she wasn't freakishly tall like moi. Currently, I stared at my cash register like it was the control panel of an alien spaceship while giving most of my attention to Rex's license photo, which apparently I'd been absentmindedly caressing with my thumb. Yeah, gonna stop doing that right now. Gathering a deep breath, mostly to breathe in some sanity and breathe out a whole tornado of tangled creeper instincts and emotions, I ceased my weirdo thumb caress and ran his credit card. No wonder he hadn't looked up from his phone. The guy probably couldn't go anywhere without being recognized and ogled. What I remembered of Rex was that first and foremost, the dude didn't enjoy attention. I suspected this was still true now. You could just tell when he gave interviews after a game. He only wanted to discuss the game. If a sports broadcaster asked him about his personal life, he'd give him a bored stare and then change the subject back to the game. Sometimes, if they persisted, he'd add a muttered "fuck off" and then walk away. But when or if he did deign to speak, he was so nice. So, so, so nice. Like the anti-bully. He'd been a hefty kid in elementary school, big for his age. Solid, as my Uncle Mac would have said. Most folks thought he was taciturn and aloof, but when it mattered, and if you were paying close attention, he could be such a gentle giant. A wistful sigh escaped me at a memory of Kid Rex picking class rejects for his kickball team during PE, me included. Ugh, I needed to step back from the ledge of my obsessive admiration and just give the poor man his cards back. Then I needed to leave him alone, let him finish his drink, get him another if he so chose, and leave him alone some more. Pivoting on my heel, I faced him and stretched the rest of the distance to deposit his license and credit card on the bar. "Here you go, signal if you need a refill," I said on a rush, hoping my voice had emerged just as monotone as his had moments earlier. I grabbed a bar towel to needlessly wipe my jittery hands and strolled down the length of the galley to Kaylee, who I definitely hadn't forgotten was still there. Damn. Kaylee watched my approach. When I drew even with her, she pounced forward, whispering, "What did he say? Did you?" "Nothing," I squeaked. Closing my eyes, I took another brain-cleansing breath and leaned my hands on the bar. "Nothing," I said, much slower, calmer, quieter, and opened my eyes, arranging my face to feign nonchalance. He just asked for a beer, and I gave him one. And there you go. Her suspicion was as plain as the lack of bangs on her forehead. Nope. Tell me what really happened.
Nothing happened with him.
Y'all, the story of my life in 4 words. Her gaze narrowed, flicked over me.
Then why do you look so skittish?
Do I? I shrugged, frowning like I didn't know what she was talking about.
Yes.
Her gaze continued its pensive assessment, and I understood why. I'd always been exceptionally gifted at concealing my feelings, even more so now. When I'm distressed or faced with a jarring situation, I wasn't usually one of those people who got clumsy or jittery. Clumsy bartenders do not exist because they don't stay bartenders for very long. I'd learned how to redirect chaos and unpleasant emotions inward, burying everything until I could unpack it all later, while my exterior radiated coolness, calm, indifference. As a bartender, this skill came in quite handy. But as a person who can't stand upheaval in any form, as in my whole being rejects it on a cellular level, this was a coping strategy. One that had served me well during my 28 years, which was likely why my looking skittish at present concerned my friend. Doing my best to keep my attention on Kaylee and not on the star of all, literally all, my fantasies, I forced an unconcerned smile.
So, anyway, are you...
Do you know him? She guessed, watching me carefully. Before I could think of a way to deflect, she sucked in a breath. You know him.
Ah!
How do you know him?
Kaylee, how? I went to high school with him, I said, deciding this truth was best.
Better she didn't realize him was Rex McMurtry. Even though Kaylee was a good friend, and we often watched his games together, I'd never told her about my past. Or lack of a past, with him. If she realized the big guy was Rex T.W. McMurtry, she'd go over and ask for an autograph.
Oh.
She leaned back, her chin lifting as her gaze grew sympathetic. Well, then you're off the hook.
Off the hook?
Yeah. I'm not going to force you to flirt with some a-hole from high school. I angled my head to the side.
But you'd force me to flirt with a stranger?
Absolutely. A-holes from high school are the worst. Ask me how I know.
Okay, how do you know?
I don't want to discuss it. See, that's how bad high school a-holes are. Even I don't wish to talk about it, and I want to talk about everything.
Blah.
How disappointing. She craned her neck, glancing at Rex again and giving him a look of judgy disappointment.
Did he recognize you?
No. I cleared my throat, wiping at the bar with the towel in my hand. I felt certain he would have no idea who I was, even if he looked at me square in the face. I also felt certain, given what I knew of his temperament, he would have zero interest in dealing with some unknown admiring from afar fan from his hometown. We may have gone to school together, but we'd never moved within the same social circles.
But you recognize him.
He must have been awful, she lamented. Oh, well, that sucks. I might as well have a drink.
What'll it be?
I reached for a martini glass because I knew what it would be.
I suppose a vodka martini will do.
Her eyes moved to my right, to where we kept the cherries.
Got it.
I readied myself to defend the condiment tray, Kaylee was always snatching cherries, and reached for the vodka. But then Kaylee's phone chimed.
Belay that order, this might be Nash.
She grabbed her bag.
Nash? Is he meeting you here?
Yes, he's picking me up.
Whipping her phone out, she scanned the screen.
He's picking you up? After midnight? Midweek?
Yep, sorry, did I forget to mention that?
She jumped off her stool, tapping out a message on her phone.
You have your car keys? I'm really just here to drop the car off.
Yes, I have my keys.
I was all sorts of confused. Are you and Nash back together? Of course not. She lifted her briefcase from the stool, her phone chiming again. She smiled down at something she read on the screen. Okay, I'm leaving. See you later, Gator. Say hey to Nash for me. I will. And? She shot a meaningful look toward Rex at the end of the bar. Let me know if you need us to come back at closing and help you with high school trash. Sure thing. Giving me a quick, sympathetic smile, Kaylee dashed out of the bar. I watched her go, my traitorous eyes settling on Rex as the door closed behind her. No longer staring at his phone, his large hand encircled the half-full pint of amber ale, which he seemed to find engrossing. My heart gave a stupid, weak flutter, something it hadn't done in ages. More than just Rex's forehead was now visible. His eyes were mostly in shadow, but, yep, he still looked fine as hell. More breathtaking in person than he was on TV. Visceral masculinity. Raw charisma. Magnetic. Even the grumpy set of his mouth did it for me. The weak flutter in my heart became a gallop. He's so gorgeous. The dark stubble on his square jaw, cheeks, and chin framed his lips. Even in a grim line, like now, they were lovely and luscious. I'm unhappy to report that as a teenager, I'd kissed my pillow more than once, wishing the cotton blend of my pillowcase were those lips. I sensed him stir and I flinched, turning my back to him as another scorching wave of embarrassment climbed up my neck. Pretending to be busy, I faced the liquor shelf, picked up random bottles, set them down again, and strained my ears. Wishing and not wishing Rex would ask for another beer, I successfully resisted the urge to rush over and offer him a refill. Instead, I forced my brain to run through the list of tasks I needed to finish before closing. With any luck, the next time he waved me over would be to close his tab. Then he'd leave, my contented life would go on, and I'd watch his Thanksgiving Day game while he continued to be blissfully ignorant of my existence. I refilled the napkin dispensers at each of the empty tables and contemplated the irony of my predicament. Sharing the same space as Rex McMurtry for, I glanced at my watch, the last 53 minutes would have sent teenage Abby into raptures. This was noteworthy because teenage Abby didn't go into raptures for much. Extra time in the high school pottery studio, free concert tickets, free yarn. But she would have been over the moon tonight. My sophomore year of high school revolved around Mr. Peterson's shop class, during which I'd try not to stare at Rex. He'd sat three tables in front of me, and it was the first time I'd discovered male backsides could be attractive. Whereas adult Abby did not feel rapturous at Rex's loitering. I felt impatient. His presence felt like a big, fat interruption in my lovely, quiet, calm existence, a bone in my salmon fillet, a large seed in my seedless watermelon, a pebble of indeterminate origin in my shoe. Rex had nursed his first pint for a full half hour before gesturing to me, again without looking up and ordering another. I was happy to provide a refill, as it was a timely opportunity to avoid his eyes and breathlessly say, "We close in about 20 minutes. Are you sure you want another?"
"Yes, please."
"I'll just close you out then."
"Okay, thank you."
He hadn't moved his credit card from where I'd set it earlier, so I grabbed it and cashed out his tab. Swiftly, I placed the receipt and the pen on the counter along with his card, hopeful he'd sign, finish his beer, and leave, and that I could forget about the jarring disruption and pretend it had never happened. But that is not what occurred. Each table, one by one, cashed out. Even the Larsons, who typically sipped their one drink for 6 hours and dawdled until they were rickrolled out of the place, They'd left at least 10 minutes ago. In high school, I hadn't minded how Rex's presence seemed to draw all my attention, distracted me from whatever I was doing and whoever I was with. But now, I found the distraction bothersome. Unwillingly, I'd kept one eye on Rex while I cleaned, put away glasses, checked the liquor levels, and retrieved new bottles from the back. Never willing to actually look directly at him, nevertheless, I'd been acutely aware of his lack of movement. I mean, he'd moved a little. He'd finished half his second beer, but hadn't touched the pen or the paper or his card. He definitely made no move to put on his coat or walk to the door. Nerves built inside of me, weaving a tapestry of anxious dread. What if he did recognize me? I'd convinced myself I didn't think it would happen, but we'd gone to school together for 13 years, and I had been exceptionally tall, my one defining trait as far as my classmates were concerned. Maybe instead of just tall girl, he did know my name. Would I then be expected to speak to him? I didn't want to speak to him. I wanted to continue admiring him from afar, as I'd done forever. I didn't want anything to change. I'd twisted myself so tightly, frustrated at my lack of calm, that when the lights flipped on, the abrupt intro of Rick Astley's Never Gonna Give You Up made me jump. I almost dropped the napkin dispenser I'd been wrestling. Pressing a hand to my sternum, I ceased fighting with the napkins and blinked against the sudden brightness, blowing out a long breath. I need a drink and my bed and 3 days off.
You okay there, hun?
Ingrid bumped my hip as she walked past, splitting her attention between me and the mess I was making with the napkins.
Peachy.
Facts were facts. I couldn't concentrate while the one guy I'd compared all other men to, nay, all other humans, sat just 30 feet away. And he still hadn't sheathed those forearms.
Why won't he leave? Doesn't he have to get home? Or, you know, wherever he's sleeping?
Rex lived in Chicago from preseason until after the playoffs. Of that I was sure. I had no idea what he was doing down here in Texas in the middle of the regular season.
I'm cashing out table 6.
Ingrid held up a credit card, talking over the loud song.
And I did all my side work already. Do you need any help?
Nope, I'm almost finished. Everything is prepped for tomorrow. Ingrid looked relieved, but then she dipped her head toward the bar.
What about the big guy?
I glanced at Rex, my throat dry, my eyes moving over his broad shoulders and back. He seemed to be having difficulty adjusting to the sudden brightness of the room, and it looked like he'd shielded his eyes with a hand. I'll encourage him to finish up. She continued to contemplate him.
Should I call the security guys or Walker just in case?
All the businesses in the shopping area surrounding the bar shared a security team. They watched over the storefronts at night and occasionally helped us with customers who were reluctant to leave at closing. Rarely they had to call the police for backup. I shook my head. Nah, I'm sure it'll be fine. She shot me a disbelieving look.
He's huge. Once table 6 leaves, it's just you and me. Are you sure?
He'll go, no problem.
What makes you think so?
I know him. We went to high school together.
Oh, good.
Ingrid gave me a nod and practically skipped to the register. She didn't have 3 days off like me, but we'd both pulled a double shift and were equally anxious to get home and off our feet. As I abandoned the half-filled dispenser, I wondered if perhaps Rex's presence was an allegory for my life. He'd walked into my bar still just as untouchable as he'd been in high school. He was right there. Right there. But it made no difference. I would always like Rex. Admire him. Like I admired fancy vacation destinations. But given who he was and who I was and my limitations and or lack of ambition, I could never do anything about it or change my currently comfortable, minimal stress existence. Presently, however, I had no choice but to speak with him. I could no longer wait for him to leave on his own. Chin held high, I marched to the bar with every intention of continuing down the galley. At the last minute, I turned to the back office and decided to double-check the inventory, hoping against hope he'd be gone by the time I emerged. I skimmed the shelves, recounting all the supplies I'd tallied a few minutes prior. I checked my numbers against what I'd written down, feeling validated when I found one less bag of single-serve potato chips than last time. Good thing I did that, I muttered, changing my chip bag count from 102 to 101, then checked my watch. We were on the third repeat of Never Gonna Give You Up, and I'd given Rex an additional 10 minutes. Replacing the clipboard, I peeked my head around the doorframe, looking toward the end of the bar, and there he was, sitting in the same position, his hand over his eyes, leaning forward, elbows on the bar. Hell's balls! I rubbed my forehead, frowning with every ounce of my being. Now I really had no choice. Drawing in a fortifying breath, I strolled down the galley, clinking bottles and glasses together purposefully as I passed them, and then tapping the surface of the bar noisily with my nails when I drew even with his hunched figure. He didn't move. I reached under the bar to the volume of the speaker and lowered it manually so I wouldn't have to shout over Rick Astley, promising to never let me down. We still had one more full Rick roll to go. Clearing my throat very loudly, I asked, "Can I get you anything else?" He still didn't move, made no sign or sound that he'd heard my question. Ignoring the siren call of his forearms, I debated whether or not to nudge his shoulder, chaos brewing within me at the thought of touching him. We'd touched before. In kindergarten, he'd passed me glue, and our fingers had brushed. In third grade, I'd collided into him on the playground while failing at somersaults. In seventh grade, another finger brush when he'd handed me a plate of pizza during a Girl Scout meeting at his aunt's house. Our junior year of high school, he accidentally bumped to my chair in the cafeteria and put his hand on my shoulder to brace himself. But there'd never been any purposeful touching. I opened my mouth, uncertain what to say. But he spoke before I could translate my plans into action.
"Did we go to high school together?"
Chapter 3. On the whole, human beings want to be good, but not too good, and not quite all the time. George Orwell, All Art is Propaganda, Critical Essays. I snapped my mouth shut, my spine stiffening, caught, a jolt of adrenaline pulsing from my chest to my toes. Rex removed his hand from his face and blinked at me with hazy but still so amazingly handsome hazel eyes, bleary and red.
"Where'd you go to high school?"
He slurred like his tongue was heavy, his head lolling to the side. My shock at his initial question was quickly replaced by new shock, this time heavily flavored with panic. "Balls! Balls! You're drunk?" It was a rhetorical question. He was drunk. Anyone could see that. Very drunk. Commode-hugging, knee-walking drunk. And I'd served him 2 beers. Which meant, "You were drunk when you came in." My stomach plummeted. He gave me a sloppy nod, which transformed into a sloppy head shake.
Don't change the subject. "You. I know you."
He pointed in my direction, his head lolling again, giving me the impression he was having trouble keeping it upright.
"But I don't remember, and I should."
"Lord, help me over the fence," I mumbled, covering my mouth with my palm, panic now a beating drum of doom between my ears. I'd served a drunk person.
That waitress said we went to high school together.
He tossed his thumb over his shoulder. The movement would have sent him careening backward had he not been sitting on the stool. His eyes moved over me.
I don't remember you,
he said, squinting.
Are you married?
Am I what?
We didn't date. If we dated, you'd be married.
Excuse me?
Training wheels,
he muttered, breathing out a weird laugh, like something was both really funny and sad. He closed his eyes and pointed to himself, his tone anguished.
I'm training wheels.
I knew his nickname. Everyone did. He'd been dubbed TW, or Training Wheels, in high school because he'd used to help incoming freshman football players find their footing. It was a sweet nickname. At least I'd always thought so. But now the moniker appeared to cause him frustration, and I supposed I knew why. Over the last year in particular, a fair number of his friends had gotten married, and they had all married Rex's former girlfriends, or women he'd dated. A sports announcer named Clarence O'Day thought it would be funny to repurpose Rex's nickname and apply it to his, training of women for male friends, or that women had used him as training wheels. Gross and misogynistic? Yes. But it had stuck like glitter and had become a running joke during his games, brought up often by the sportscaster who'd coined the perversion of the nickname and had used it to remind people how clever he supposedly was. I couldn't stand that guy. Rex had always acted like it didn't faze him, but obviously it did. Otherwise, he wouldn't have just said,
"We didn't date. If we dated, you'd be married."
Listen, can I call you a cab? I winced, wishing I could take back the thoughtless words as soon as they'd left my mouth. Since I followed Rex's career, I knew he'd had a bad experience with a cab driver in Seattle a few months ago. The guy had tried to kidnap him at gunpoint. It had been all over the news. Rex shook his head as it fell into his hands. Then he kept on shaking it.
Please don't call a taxi.
You definitely shouldn't drive. Guilt plucked at me and was soon joined by a chord of remorse. I'd never served a drunk person before. Ever. I'd had plenty of drunk folks come in here and try to order, but this was the first time I hadn't denied service. Because you were too busy being flustered by lust, stalker.
They all know me,
he said, cutting into my tumultuous thoughts. I rubbed my forehead, trying to think, find my usual calm, and responded on autopilot. Who knows you? I needed to keep him talking. If he talked, then he'd stay awake, and that would buy me time to figure out a solution to this insane problem.
Everyone.
He said this to his beer, which was when I noticed he still had alcohol in front of him. Deftly, I snatched the pint glass and poured the remainder down the drain. You mean all the taxicab drivers know you?
There is only one season in Texas. Football season.
He laughed again, a Texas twang making its first appearance. I think I understood. If I put him in a cab, then he'd be recognized, and that might not turn out well for him, like in Seattle. Can I call someone? I asked, wondering if I should brew coffee as my gaze skated over his handsome features. He was drunk, but he also looked absolutely exhausted. Compassion squeezed my heart.
Nope. No one.
He chuckled, and the chuckle picked up speed in that way it often does with the intoxicated. Soon he was laughing, hard, soundlessly. Waiting for his laughter to subside, I continued to study him, at a loss for the 100th time that night. My guilt at having served alcohol to a drunk Rex felt like a boulder, heavy on my chest. When his hilarity tapered, I asked gently, "What about your brother?"
"Lives in New York."
"Your sister?"
"Bahamas."
"Your dad?"
"Don't call him."
I chewed on my lip, debating. "You have so many friends, surely..."
"No,"
he said firmly, his smile falling suddenly, his eyes cloudy with what looked like misery.
"Unless you want to get married."
I made a face to hide the strange tightening in my throat, because... What? Drunk Rex wanted to marry me? Is that what he meant?
Come on.
That'd be crazy and predatory on my part, even if I did know of a 24-hour drive-through marriage barn not more than 5 miles from...
Nope.
Really, Abby? Really? Can we discuss this? Gasp! You rapacious bitch, how dare you? Drunks can't consent. And no way he actually wanted to marry me. Or, and hear me out, you could always just do it. And if he regretted the decision once sober, he could divorce.
Absolutely not.
Rex's hand covered mine, yanking me from my guilty thoughts and sending a rush of spiky alertness up my arm. And by alertness, I meant,
alert, we have purposeful touching.
Hey, you know what?
He lowered his voice, and I did my darndest to focus on his words and not the feel of his hand covering mine, warm and strong. Rex leaned in, his hazel eyes intent.
We could get married. You could marry me. If I were married, then it would stop.
Breathless, from both arguing with the astonishingly irrational, sinister, and selfish devil on my shoulder and the way he was currently looking at me, so hopeful, vulnerable, I slowly pulled my hand away, folded my arms, and tried to reason with us both. Rex, you're drunk. It's 15 minutes past closing time. Who do I call to pick you up? His jaw ticked, his gaze turning to an icy glare.
No one. Just.
His eyes seemed to thaw and then warm the longer they held mine, his forehead wrinkling. And abruptly he looked distinctly despairing.
You are.
I held my breath as seconds ticked by, the moment officially becoming prolonged. Then he finally finished his thought with,
"Very beautiful for a bartender."
Ingrid and the couple from Table 6 helped me load Rex into my car. Yes, moving him required all four of us. He'd been a big, muscly guy in high school, but now he was like a wall of concrete and had grown at least 2 inches since our senior year. Luckily, miracle of miracles, neither Ingrid nor the couple had seemed to recognize him.
"Where are you taking me?"
he mumbled as soon as I slid into the driver's seat and closed my door. "Allenbach, to your dad's house." I eyed the seatbelt on his right. He made no move to fasten it. "You should put your belt on."
"Or we could go somewhere else."
He shifted, presumably trying to face me, but my car was just too small. Even with the seat all the way back, Rex's knees hit the dash. "Like where? Are you feeling okay? Should I take you to the hospital?"
"Like your place."
His voice was barely more than a rumbly whisper, and he punctuated the suggestiveness of his words with an absent-minded lick of his lips. I chuckled, shaking my head, refusing to entertain the suggestion, even though I really wanted to entertain the suggestion. I wanted to entertain the suggestion so hard. But no. His dad's house in Allenbach was the safest place for him. Do you need help with your seatbelt? Rex blinked slowly, his bleary eyes lowering to my mouth.
Yes.
Gritting my teeth against the ruckus of fluttering nerves in my stomach, I silently cursed myself. I hadn't really meant the offer. In Texas, sometimes when folks make an offer, it's really just a not-so-subtle hint for the other person to do something. Do you want me to get the door? Really means, go answer your damn door. Do you need help getting your shoes on? Really means, why haven't you put your damn shoes on yet? He was from Texas. He knew the code. And yet he didn't move. Just kept staring at my mouth while our breaths increasingly fogged the interior glass. Swallowing thickly, I rolled my eyes for no reason and ground out a terse, fine. I unfastened my seatbelt before I could think better of it, reached over Rex's barrel of a chest, and tried to grab the passenger side seatbelt. This, of course, brought our faces within inches, and the entirety of my torso flush against his. The ruckus in my stomach became a hullabaloo, and I snatched the belt, pulling it too quickly and tripping the stop mechanism. Dadgummit, I swore, shaking my head at myself, and held my breath. I needed to slow my movements. Coaxing the belt forward, I felt a whisper of a touch on my back, and I stiffened, my eyes cutting to his. Drunk Rex's gaze was still focused, or rather unfocused, on my lips, his eyes hooded.
You are very, very beautiful.
He whispered in that same rumbly tone. So you mentioned earlier. And you are very drunk. My voice hitched as I leaned away, bringing the belt to the fastener at his hip. I've been a bartender long enough to know all people look like supermodels after one too many beers or whiskeys. Lean all the way back, please. The windows were now completely fogged. My hands were shaking, and I fumbled to fit the pieces of his seatbelt together. And then, out of absolutely nowhere, and without any warning, his fingers pushed into my hair at my temple, fisted and pulled, exposing my neck. I sucked in a startled breath, flinched, and let go of the seatbelt. The metal piece boomeranged, smacked him in the face so hard I heard it hit bone, which forced him to release my hair. I covered my mouth, and he covered his cheek where he'd been belted, literally. Ow. Oh my God, I'm sorry. I reached forward, but then snatched my hands back, balling them into fists in front of me. I'm so sorry.
No, I'm sorry.
His head fell back against the headrest, and he rubbed at his cheek, a gruff laugh tumbling from his luscious lips.
Your hair is so... It looked soft, and I... But I'm sorry.
He slurred.
I shouldn't have done that.
He shook his head fiercely.
I never do that.
We sat in silence for a minute while I worked to bridle all the various involuntary and confused tremblings and twistings and poundings within my body. Rex closed his eyes, gathering several deep breaths. Rex, I broke the silence, eyeballing the seatbelt on his right once more. Do you think, maybe, you could buckle your own seatbelt? He nodded, swallowing, his eyes still closed. Grateful for the reprieve, I buckled myself in and turned the engine while I watched him reach to his right with clumsy movements. Eventually, he managed to bring the strap over his chest and hips, but his fingers kept slipping and missing the buckle. Here, let me help. Readying myself for more touching, I covered his hands and helped him guide the latch together, breathing out a huge sigh of relief when it finally clicked. There, I said, turning back to the windshield, sweaty, breathing hard, feeling like I'd just navigated a ninja warrior obstacle course. Okay, let's...
Oh, Oh, no.
Rex's hands came back to the buckle, his movements suddenly frantic. I stiffened. What? What's wrong?
I need...
He turned away, grabbing for the door latch, yanking it so hard the metal piece broke clear off. I gasped and then recoiled, pressing myself as far from him as I could and against the driver's side door because Rex McMurtry, the man of my dreams, had just thrown up. All over himself. And me. And my car. Chapter 4. Do you think we can be friends? I asked. He stared up at the ceiling.
Probably not. But we can pretend.
Priya Artis, ever my Merlin. I didn't think I'd be able to sleep. What with a mostly naked wreck sleeping on an air mattress just inches from where I'd collapsed on my futon. But I'd zonked out the moment my head had hit the pillow. That said, I didn't sleep very long. Perhaps if the prior evenings and early mornings events hadn't floated into my consciousness the moment I cracked an eye open, I would have been able to flip my pillow, turn, and return to blissful slumber. But the memory of hosing off a fully clothed Rex on my patio, then hosing off myself, then undressing him in the dark and wrapping him in a sheet and then brushing his teeth while he sloppily told me how beautiful I was and called me an angel, had my eyes flying open and inspecting the floor next to me. Nope, not a dream. There he was. The dude. The man. The Rex. The guy who'd asked me to marry him and then barfed all over my car last night, sprawled out on the bed I'd made for him, wearing nothing but his underwear, a sheet, and a comforter. He slept peacefully at present, like he hadn't a care in the world. Mid-afternoon, Texas sunshine kissed his tan profile, his bulging bicep where he hugged the pillow,